And thanks to Judge Cameron for filling in for Judge Jansen. First case is item 17, docket number 340930, Bronner versus Detroit. Go ahead.
Your Honor, may it please the court, my name is Jason Newman on behalf of GFL Environmental USA. May I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, you can.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this is the case where the city of Detroit is essentially wearing two hats, one as the operator of a municipal bus system and the other as its own self-insured for no-fault benefits. And the issue here is whether
But here's the question. The city of Detroit did pay and they fulfilled its obligation under the statute, right? Because the injured person was paid the no-fault benefits.
Mr. Brown,
right?
Was paid, yes.
Right.
Okay.
Why isn't that, that fulfills the obligation under the statute. Why can't they then turn around and say, okay, well, you know, we've got this contract. I mean, it was fortuitous that they actually had this and that the truck hit their bus. But you know, it's any and all, and we can come and get reimbursed for what we've already paid out. Why can't you do that?
Well, Your Honor, the reason that you can't is because the no-fault statute is a little bit more comprehensive than that. I think the issue that you're discussing is certainly the priority issue. Yes, they obviously paid first and fulfilled that obligation, but it's comprehensive in terms of the issues of indemnification and subrogation also. And there's actually, this was contemplated by the No-Fault Act. There's two provisions that allow for indemnification or subrogation.
And this doesn't meet either one of those.
Right. It would be the MCCAA or 500.3116 that deals with the issues of tortfeasors for either out-of-state accidents that didn't have no-fault insurance or for intentionally caused harms. And none of the issue here, whether or not you can get that through contractual indemnification, isn't one of the exceptions to going out and getting indemnification.
Right, right.
Why can't this, are you familiar with the term reinsurance?
I am, to an extent, yeah.
Yeah. Why couldn't the city just consider this reinsurance, that it just had you as like a life insurance company or a casualty company saying, we're going to farm out our risk? And they lucked out in this case. It's pretty lucky that they had the contract. But consider this reinsurance. I guess my question is this. Is reinsurance allowed under the No-Fault Act?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that it's, I don't know that I can say whether it is or isn't, but I think there is an important, if you look at the contract, I think this might answer your question. So in terms of the general liability insurance, there's a specific obligation in that contract to make the city of Detroit an additional named insured under our policy. There's nothing in that contract that talks about no-fault benefits. There's nothing where they're saying, hey, you have to add, here's all our vehicles, you have to add all of those onto your no-fault policy. If there was, I don't know that they couldn't do a reinsurance in some sort of fashion, but I don't think that's the case we have here.
Well, I don't think it was the intent of the parties, but it may be what's happened. It might be the outcome. But okay.
Are you saying that the indemnification agreement is not broad enough to include this situation? Are you saying even though it is broad enough, the No-Fault Act doesn't provide for this type of agreement? Therefore, it is not operable in this situation?
Well, I think it's both, Your Honor. I think that the No-Fault Act doesn't allow for it for the reasons that I was discussing earlier, but also no, I don't think that it's covered under this. And if you look at what is covered, so this isn't a situation where the parties sat down and we specifically said, we will cover your no-fault benefits, and then now we're coming back here and we're trying to say, well, as a matter of law, we really couldn't do that.
Well, under 9.01, it includes any negligent act attributable to the contractor or any of its associates. I mean, that's pretty broad.
It is broad, but I think the limitation on there is not that it's all liabilities, obligations, things of that nature, but it's limited to the extent you caused by the negligence or the tortious act of the insured. And here I think there's a distinction between the fact that our vehicle was involved in the accident and what the actual claim for Mr. Bronner was. The claim for Mr. Bronner is for no-fault benefits, which is not in regard to fault. So that's not an element here. And maybe in a certain sense there's a factual connection, but there's no legal connection between Mr. Bronner's claim and the fault of our client, the legal fault of our client. And And a second point, the only reason that the city of Detroit is responsible for paying Mr. Bronner's benefits is because they're also an insurance company. If they had just, let's say AAA insurance or something of that nature, it would have been that insurance company's responsibility and not the city of Detroit. So it's kind of separated out a little bit, but I think there is a distinction between.
I want to get back to what you talked about in answer to one of my questions about the two statutory provisions that allow for indemnification. Universal underwriters, I don't think that decision relied upon those two statutory exceptions, if you want to call them that. It was simply, if I remember correctly, the freedom of contract. And so they said, and they weren't obviously dealing with what we're dealing with, which is mandatory coverage. Mm-hmm. But isn't that what they essentially said? Was that, look, we got the freedom of contract, and they're allowed to do what was essentially, I think, the same thing. It was some form of indemnification for the non-mandatory coverage issues, and they upheld it. Or am I getting that wrong? I thought that's what they said.
That's right, for collision.
Right. So I don't remember the court using those exceptions, and if they didn't, that must mean that those aren't exclusive. Well, if you don't know, that's all right.
Yeah, Your Honor, I apologize. I don't have the owner off the top of my head.
Okay. Right.
But I guess essentially, just to kind of wrap up that part of the argument, is that we feel that the freedom of the contract issue, obviously, I think is the heart of this case. But we feel that you have to look at the circumstances and what's trying to be contracted away, and I think. There are certain aspects of the law that are statutorily dictated, and this is one of them. The other issue that we have is about the attorney fees and whether or not those were appropriate under the contract. And our issue there is that the terms of the contract says that to recover attorney's fees, they have to be expensive.
Even if they don't prevail, they're entitled to attorney fees under the contract, aren't they?
I believe they would be, yeah, right, yeah. But those attorney fees have to be expenses. What they've kind of proposed fits the definition of how we calculate a reasonable attorney fee. The issue being that because these were in-house people, there's not some bill that was handed to the city. This is something, salaries that would have to be paid irregardless of if this case ever even happened. So it doesn't fit the definition of what an expense is. And so we think that there was error there in allowing the attorney fees.
Okay, you've got plenty of time for rebuttal. Morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. I may please the court. My name is Charles Ramey. I'm Deputy Corporation Counsel for the City of Detroit. I think, as Your Honor was suggesting, that this case really does involve two entirely separate issues. The first is the city's statutory obligation to provide no-fault benefits to passengers injured on a city bus. Separate and distinct is the city's contractual indemnity right against GFL. And Your Honor is exactly correct that the no-fault payments were fully made by the city in this case. Even before this lawsuit was filed, the city, through its third-party administrator.
But does our analysis stop there? Because isn't the purpose of the No-Fault Act is to stop or to curb litigation, stop litigation, regarding negligence in relation to automobile accidents? And conceptually, that's what we have here. The issue of negligence isn't before us, but you're saying that GFL was negligent, therefore they owe us. So aren't we just taking it one step away from the No-Fault Act, and the No-Fault Act is designed to eliminate suits involving automobile negligence?
Well, but this has nothing to do with the No-Fault Act. It's simply a contractual.
It has to do with negligence, and you're saying the GFL was negligent.
Yeah, so it'd be the same as if a GFL garbage truck ran over one of our light poles. That would, if GFL didn't pay for that, we'd be in court on a contractual indemnity.
But this has to do with an automobile accident. It's different from a light pole, and isn't No-Fault, doesn't that preempt any other type of negligence suit relating to the accident?
Absolutely not. And
okay.
What we rely on is the bedrock principle of freedom of contract, which is a common law right that the city has to obtain indemnity from a vendor. That's existed ever since the state of Michigan was founded. And the
But you know, I mean, we all understand the bedrock principle of freedom of contract. But in that universal case that, like Judge Reardon said, dealt with collision damages, they don't address mandatory coverage, and they make that point, but when they make that point, it doesn't sound like they're overly positive that that would fly, because mandatory coverage is so different than the others.
So,
and that was written by the most pro-contract Supreme Court we've had in a long, long time.
I think it was written by Justice Corrigan.
So I think the whole dispute here is whether, as GFL argues, the city has to find something in the No-Fault Act that permits this indemnification, or whether, as the city argues, GFL has to find something in the act that expressly prohibits contractual indemnity. And the Supreme Court, in its 1999 decision in Koenig versus City of South Haven, had the following two sentences that we think are dispositive. They said, statutes and derogation of the common law must be strictly construed and will not be extended by implication to abrogate established rules of common law. When the meaning of a statute is unclear, it is to be given the effect which makes the least rather than the most change in the common law. So here we have a very narrow, very unique situation that is, you know, may not ever come up again. And the question is whether the city, wholly apart from the No-Fault Act, has the right to enter into a contractual indemnity agreement with its vendor. There is absolutely nothing in the No-Fault Act that speaks to that.
But what about the two provisions that Brother Counsel raised that do deal with indemnification? He says those are essentially, I think what he's arguing is that's the exclusive way that you could do it, and your situation doesn't meet that, or either one of those.
They're looking through the wrong end of the telescope. They really are. Just because the statute allows it in those situations, to take away the city's common law right to obtain this sort of contractual indemnity, GFL would have to point to something in the No-Fault Act that specifically prohibited this sort of indemnity. And I want to follow that up with another point, because in the reply brief,
wouldn't it pretty much abrogate the No-Fault Act? Everyone would go out and say, okay, we'll get no-fault insurance, or we'll self-insure, we'll pay off, and then we'll take our litigation one step further, and we'll sue whatever private party it is, you know, whatever who's ever contracting with the city for negligence once we pay off our no-fault claim.
Yeah, okay.
Wouldn't that defeat the whole purpose of the No-Fault Act?
That's completely incorrect, Your Honor.
That's what we're doing here.
No, we're not. We're dealing with a specific contractual indemnity
right.
clause.
And
that's different than suing a, quote, tortfeasor.
But isn't the issue here whether or not GFL was negligent? I mean, the issue at some point is going to be that.
No, the issue is whether there's an indemnity, contractual indemnity provision.
Right, based on GFL's negligence.
Right, but...
Okay, is there been a finding of negligence here?
Yes. Well, they've admitted it. They've admitted negligence. But, you know, nobody else in the no-fault world could pursue this sort of a claim unless, in this very unique situation, they have a contractual indemnity.
Well, let me play out that, Mr. Ramey. You said this is unique, it's unlikely, it may never happen again.
Right.
Let me present, I think, a realistic hypothetical. What happens if we rule in your favor? wouldn't it make a whole lot of sense for the city of Detroit to get rid of their city employees driving buses, get a vendor who will then drive the buses, and have this identical indemnity agreement with them? That way, you'll, in the event that your vendor, who are now driving buses, are negligent, injures a pedestrian, you'll pay that as part of your self-insurance, just the same way you did in this case, but then go after that corporation for their negligence. I mean, you're saying that it's unique, and I think that this particular factual scenario is very unique, but that would seem to me to be the next predictable business decision that the city of Detroit would make.
No, it absolutely would not.
Why not?
We can't get insurance, and no vendor that provided drivers can get insurance. But the fact is, if
the owner of the vehicle has to have the insurance, right?
Exactly. The owner has.
So if you contracted, which is maybe not the city of Detroit, but some other self-insurer, say they're going to buy they want a new line of buses, they could do the same thing Judge Cameron said with the employees, but just have a company supply the driver and the buses. Well, I guess then you're just eliminating the whole.
Yeah. Well, my situation, it's your bus and your vendor driving the bus. You would pay for, under the No Fault Act, for the injury, but then you would sue your vendor through this indemnity agreement for their negligence. Now that would I think change this from being a novel and unique case to something we probably would see a whole lot more.
Well, you know, I being at the city 5 years, I know there's no possible way that could ever happen, because the vendor, you know, obviously individuals would not be able, the driver wouldn't have the wherewithal, and nobody would have the wherewithal because the city can't get insurance. But if that was the case, we would be effectively reinsuring our risk, I guess, at that point. And again, there'd be nothing in the No Fault Act that would prohibit that.
So if we rule in your favor, that would be something that would not be prohibited under the No Fault Act.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to, you know, see it exactly. But again, I really implore the court to recognize that this expressio unis Latin phrase is looking at the wrong end of the telescope. It truly is, because you start from the presumption that the city retains its common law right to contract. And unless there's something in the No Fault Act that specifically prohibits that, and there is nothing, then we're entitled to have that contract.
So if I understand you correctly, there's nothing in the No Fault Act that prohibits reinsurance of PIP benefits?
Reinsurance, or in this case, an indemnity contract.
Okay.
And I want to turn to another issue, because in the reply brief of GFL, they raised the question of public policy, and Your Honor mentioned increasing litigation. This would not increase no-fault litigation at all. It's, you know, contractual indemnity is a separate claim. In this case, it was brought in the very pending claim that Mr. Bronner had bought. And, you know, contractual indemnity claims are brought all the time. But there is a real public policy issue here. There is a real public policy issue. And that public policy is protecting the city's taxpayers from paying for losses caused by the negligence of a vendor. That policy is expressly enshrined in Michigan statutes and constitution, which protect home rule cities and give home rule cities the rights, very broad rights. And in fact, I just want to read this one sentence from the Michigan Supreme Court's 2016 decision in the Associated Builders case. And again, I regret this wasn't in our brief, because this issue was raised in the reply brief. Associated Builders, it's 499 Michigan 177, footnote 29. We have held that home rule cities enjoy not only those powers specifically granted, but they may also exercise all powers not expressly denied. So that's saying the very same thing that we said earlier about the No Fault Act having to have something very specific to take away the city's common law right to obtain indemnity from a vendor. So there's two principles that say the very same thing, and there is nothing in the No Fault Act that remotely prohibits what the city has done here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
You know, just to hit on a couple points that were raised by Brother Council, the last issue of the public policy of protecting the taxpayers, I mean, that's something that the city of Detroit didn't have to be self-insured. They took steps to become self-insured. They could have purchased insurance. That's something that presumably was done in some sort of cost-benefit analysis, that actually having this system of being self-insured is for the benefit of the taxpayers. So I don't think that's really an overriding issue that the court should find in their favor on that matter. But just talking in public policy in general, if you are to uphold the ruling and rule in this favor of the city of Detroit, it's certainly going to give an incentive for entities to become self-insured, even but you're not necessarily municipalities, but anybody who owns, I believe, over 25 vehicles can make an application for that. You could have Ford, GM.
The statute allows them to do that.
Yeah.
Right? So that's...
Right,
they could
right.
do it right now if they wanted.
They could, but this would give them another incentive to then any vendor that they have, they could put a similar provision in there, and I think it would be shifting a lot of risk that wasn't intended by the No Fault Act.
But your best argument in terms of that the No Fault Act doesn't allow for this is the indemnification and subrogation language.
Yeah, Your Honor, and to talk about it, I mean, in terms of the common law and the right to contract, I mean, this is kind of a unique situation with motor vehicles where the No Fault Act is kind of a complete takeover of that area. In fact, 531.35 abolishes all liability except for what's then brought back in through the No Fault Act. So I think this is a unique situation where the No Fault Act does have specific provisions, specific statutory regulation for motor vehicles and how these claims for economic damages are paid. And then just sort of related, the expressio unius, I mean, that's something that's been the law in the state for over 100 years. I don't think that's something that we can just ignore just by saying that it's some Latin phrase. And then the other thing, you know, we're here on a fairly... obviously, the damage in this case were, I think, a little north of $100,000, and certainly that's not an insignificant case. But the issue, too, is this isn't necessarily something that's rare, and frankly, this could have been a traumatic brain injury. This could have been a $15 million claim. So just to say that, we should let this go through because this will hardly ever come up, I don't think that's a persuasive...
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with the amount of money. I think his point was it's just a unique situation arose in light of the fact that they contracted with this... The garbage company to your client to
right.
do work for the city.
And I get
it doesn't matter if it's $5 or $5 million. Who cares? Right. The question is, does the statute allow what they did?
I agree with you, Your Honor. And just from the policy perspective, I think this would encourage more of these type of contracts and more of the self-insured, and we'd have more litigation.
Okay.
Thank
well,
you.
Very interesting case. Thanks for your arguments, and thanks for being here early, and that case is submitted. We'll take a quick